Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan in studio with the boss.
Oh, yeah. That is the second best thing from New Jersey on this segment. I can't back that up.
I love that song because I don't know if I've told you the story. It earned me a sweet collection of autographed Springsteen vinyl.
Proceed.
I was managing a country station.
Okay.
At the time, and I began playing.
Was that a crossover?
Well, I began that. I started playing that and My Hometown.
Okay.
And Billboard magazine did a little story on it.
Oh.
That we were playing Springsteen on a country station, and a few weeks later, a package arrives with a letter from Springsteen's manager, John Landau.
Cool.
Thanking me for it, and included were every Springsteen album up to that time.
Which are all the good ones anyway.
Right, and autographed by Springsteen.
Sorry. No, there have been some good ones.
There have been some good ones.
Yeah. I'm a Jersey boy. So why did I pick that? So I'm a bachelor tonight.
And you're on fire.
And I'm on... No. So here's the deal. I picked that song, and then I kind of listened to it again and figured people might think, that's a weird thing for a 41-year-old guy whose wife is
in
Georgia and my kids are gone. Here's my point. Picture me picturing steak as the little girl.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And me hoping that I'm not on fire. Mm. I'm making steak au poivre after I go home from this show.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
And,
just for you.
I bought, yeah. It, this harkens back to my, I admit, I was walking into the Hanfords today and said to myself, self, what are we going to do for dinner? Because my default is always Chinese in a violent movie. And you never know. It may still be deciding, but I walked in, I saw this really beautiful cut of beef, and I'm like, I used to, when I would come home late from my opera exploits or whatever, operatic exploits with Eric Meehan, maybe Chris wasn't home or whatever, well before children and stuff I would stop at, there's a really excellent grocery chain called Wegmans. And we had one, and I would stop there and get like this, nice ribeye or something, and go home and make myself some steak. I grew up on a cow farm, people. Right. Old habits die hard. And I definitely have tried to cut back on my red meat consumption for health reasons and earth reasons and health reasons.
But sometimes you just want to treat
yourself. Sometimes you're just like, you know what? So anyway, yeah, I'm going home and hopefully not setting myself on fire, maybe to the tunes of Bruce Springsteen or Bon Jovi or... the Bottle Rockets or any other good New Jersey band.
Ooh,
that I can
Bottle Rockets, nice.
Oh, hey, man. They're actually, by the way, check them out if no one's ever heard of them. They're fabulous. Fountains of Wayne. There's others. I'll come up with them. So
our old friend Bill Chinnick.
There you go. See, I can't even throw down with you. I'm not going to try. I'm going to use my expertise for good. So today we're talking, we're doing a couple things today. Number one, I brought in our wine of the week. A good friend of mine, his name is Doug Snell. Doug is, he works for Pine State Beverage now. He's been all over the world. His nickname is the Doctor, D-O-K-T-O-R, which is a professional German term. He has spent a lot of time over in Germany and really, really has deep expertise. And one of his, he's always talking about preaching the gospel of Riesling, yeah? And Riesling is absolutely my favorite grape and a lot of wine geeks and or derivatives thereof. It is got so many permutations, so many, it's a wonderful, it's like an opal, right? Like depending on how you look at it, it's really tremendous. One of the things about good Rieslings is that, if you open it, given the acidity, given the, sometimes, relatively higher sugar content, residual sugar, it'll last. Even if you've had a little bit, it still holds a lot of the things that make wine tasty and drinkable as opposed to lifeless and flat and dull. So what we're going to do today, I have in all of our glasses here, our wine of the week, which is the Von Buhl Armand. This is a cabinet level Riesling. That is a German wine designation. And we'll actually, when we get into Germany, we'll go into all their wine designations. But it's a designation that has to deal with time of picking, relative sugar content of the must. It's basically, and it's in order to provide that every wine labeled this is of at least a certain quality level. Also, no chapelization, right? This is important, especially in sweet wines. The no adding of sugar, right? All the sugars are natural sugars that are from the grape, which is why the time left on the vine is so important. And you're measuring the solids, which is mostly sugars and other minerals, versus the water content of that grape, and you're seeing where that's going. And so when you're buying a cabinet level wine, not just from Von Buell, but from anyone, you're assured a certain level of the things that make German Riesling. Yeah. Okay. So right now we're enjoying the fresh bottle, and it's absolutely, I mean, it's everything that I've described. It's
wonderful.
Yeah. Very ripe, full of really sort of unctuous citrus fruit, pear. It's tremendous. And the acidity is absolutely there, right? Like, that's the one thing that, you know, people are like, well, you know, why is Riesling so ageable? The acidity. And not from a lot of German Rieslings, you know, the cheaper bottles, they're grown on the flatland, right? Like any, and this is true for anywhere, folks, just sort of a glimpse into the life of wine. When you're on a slope, when your ability to have drainage, proper drainage, and perhaps that slope is made out of stuff that's not really fertile soil, it's actually really, you know, it's schist or it's granite or it's something that you wouldn't like look at and be like, ah, here I will plant my garden of Eden. It's and on purpose, right? You want those vines to sink the roots down really, really, really deep, find the water table. That's how we get the best wines. That is true in Napa Valley as it is in the Mosel Valley of Germany. By the way, you're noticing these are all valleys, right? And on the flatlands that are indeed fertile, right? I mean, that's where the rivers have, you know, gradually as they meander, have dumped all their soils, all their really good. That's terrific if you want to grow any number of agricultural products, including vines, but you're going to find that the grapes that come from those vines are dull and lifeless, and this sort of stuff that goes into apothic. Sorry, apothic drinkers, it's true. Anyway, so right now we're drinking something that it's relatively risky to harvest. I mean, these are like steep, you can't like just take a tractor on a lot of these slopes. And that's how it retains that wonderful acidity and almost a steeliness. So that's that. And we'll try at the end of my segment, we'll try a bottle that was opened and it's down about 2/3 of the way. It was opened last Thursday. And I just want to, unsolicited opinions. Well, actually, I will solicit the opinions, I suppose. That's a sort of silly thing to say, of these guys, and just sort of see, is it comparable to the fresh wine that they just had? And actually, I'm just going to let them do that because I don't want to. This is a radio station, and there's a lot of very expensive things that I don't want to break. And also, Stephen King owns all this stuff, and I just don't want to end up like the next character in the next thing.
Sorry, Howie, look out.
That goes, that's always bad. Like the, I don't want to be the first character you meet. Because that's like the Star Trek equivalent of like Ensign Ricky.
Yeah, yeah. What color shirt is he wearing?
Yeah. Oh, red.
Too bad.
Sorry, buddy.
Do you want some more? Or do you want the older wine?
I'll get to it. All right. I'm going to take a break and drink the fresh wine, and we'll see if I start to slur my words as I continue. Boy, that's delicious. All right, I want to talk a little bit about natural wines, of which this is one, and it's getting to me more of a buzzword. In fact, I read you Jancis Robinson, Master of Wine and fantastic author. I read you her comments, I believe, last week or the week before on this whole, like, both embracing and getting rid of natural wines, because what is a natural wine? And so let's talk a little bit about that, because I think this is going to become more and more important as we continue. Why? Well, actually, I read an interesting article today talking about, interestingly, in light of the tariffs and the potential, you know, trade issues with European wines, they are embracing the fact that pretty much every year California has a wine glut because it's really easy to grow a lot of stuff in California, and they are planting a lot of grapes in places where it's very fertile, and it's not like impressive that you're growing grapes, but you're growing grapes because the American public drinks a lot of wine. And so they're talking about, you know, oh, there's going to be no problem getting cheap wine, but it's going to be exactly what I just said. It's going to be cheap wine, and it's going to be grown using pesticides. It's going to be grown using fertilizer. It's not going to be grown in the ways that, you know, I like to think people who would listen to this segment and who would frequent my shop really want their wines to be. But that said, you don't want like dirty wines, right? Like there's a lot of, and this has happened locally as well as, you know, when I've gone on trips abroad to see wineries, there's certain people who believe that like total hands off means not sanitary and things like that. Sanitation's important, folks. So even just understand that even people who are making, you know, extraordinarily natural wines using native yeasts, who are zero manipulation, gravity fed, this and that, they are still cleaning their facilities with, and they can be using natural things, but they're still, it's not like super hippiedom. Even like, I grant you, the first winery I ever went into was a former mushroom factory, and it had that vibe. It was not like, you know, glorious and beautiful. Like, I mean, if anybody's ever gone out, you know, and seen some of the wineries in the major regions, that are, you know, Cacheras Rioja estate that was designed by Frank Gehry, or, you know, things like this. But it doesn't mean that they're not clean. And that's a really important thing to sort of start to talk about. But then we're talking about, are they adding sulfites? Are they doing things like that? And we're going to get into what, you know, health myths next week, including, you know, are sulfites bad for you? Are sulfites good for you? Stuff like that. But just understand that in essence, there's a lot of these like natural wines being advertised very, very heavily by certain people. And some of them are good, some of them are bad, but it benefits you to, if you have curiosities, talk to your favorite wine merchant. Also figure out which importers are bringing in natural wines that are of a certain quality level, that won't disappoint you or that won't be too, you know, off-putting, because there are natural wines that feel comfortable and there's natural wines that feel slightly left of center. Doesn't mean they're wrong or bad, but you should be prepared for them, or else you might end up being like, I don't like wine. And that would be a shame. Because the result of some of these natural fermentations, carbonic fermentations, experimental fermentations, they're not what you're used to. So do ask us about it. And remember things like this. Remember things like organic means no chemical pesticides or fungicides, but it also means things like you can spray copper sulfite. That poisons groundwater. So maybe organic's good, maybe it's not. There's another practice called lute raisonné, which is basically organic, but they kind of tend to veer away from things that are going to poison groundwater. There's things like biodynamics, and we're going to get into biodynamics pretty heavily in a little while, which is planting according to cycles of the sun and the moon and the stars, using natural fertilizers, and a little bit of mystical hoodoo all wrapped into one. These are all considered natural wines, but they're all very, very different. So as we go on, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. For right now, however, we're going to try last week's Armand Riesling. We're going to see if it retains some vigor, some vitality. See if Rich would drink it on a bachelor night if it was all that was in his fridge. What do you say?
Yes. Yeah. But I can. There's a clear difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not as crisp.
That's right. The sugar really carries the day.
Mm.
But there's still. I mean, it still tastes like if you put a bit into an apple, it would sort of taste like that. Like, oh, it's really sort of juicy.
It's very good.
It hasn't faded in that sort of fruity way, which is very often what you'll lose. Hey, before I run out of time, I wanted to mention on the 27th, not this week, right? This week would be the third Thursday, but we are not having a tasting because it is school vacation week. So next Thursday, we'll be having our good friend Andre from Devinish, which is actually a company that specializes in natural wine. So if you have curiosities about that, do come out and ask Andre, ask me, ask anybody. And we'll be trying those February 27th from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock. We hope to see you there. I will talk to you next week, and we will talk about sulfites, fining, filtering, and other stuff that people worry about. Cheers.
Good luck with the steak tonight.
Gracias.
Maybe get that train set out, too.
I'm working on it. I'm very excited.
That sounds very cool.
I kind of tend to get a little geeky when I start to model out. It's funny. Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Good. It's my family, you know. So.
That's right.
Cheers.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Mahon, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday here on Downtown.